We're going to go on to the last case, and that is number 113763. And it's American Trucking and Transportation versus Allied Tube and Conduit Corporation. And it's Mr. Evelyn.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. The insurance carrier in this case asks the court to do something that is unprecedented under Illinois law, and that is to construe an additional insured endorsement to literally mean the opposite of what it says. This is a case where Allied was added as an additional insured, and that additional insured endorsement says Allied is included now as an insured.
What's the language in the additional insured endorsement drafted after Morris sued Allied, or does the endorsement use form language?
I suspect it uses form language. It was issued after the Morris lawsuit.
Do you know?
No, I do not know.
Okay.
But nonetheless, it was issued while litigation in the underlying Cook County case was pending. It was added retroactively in connection with a summary judgment proceeding that occurred in Cook County. And the language that was chosen specifies that, by definition, Allied isn't insured. It then goes on to, in the exclusionary provision, say that we are insured to the extent of an insured, which under Illinois law is construed to mean any insured. And that, by its very terms, is, I would submit to this court, broader than any additional insured endorsement cited in either party's brief in this matter.
Well, you rely heavily on the broad scope of that phrase. But are you aware of a case offering that broad interpretation specifically in the context of an additional insured endorsement?
No, Your Honor. We found no case to that effect. But here's what's important about the cases we did cite. Those cases come in the context of an exclusion. And exclusions under Illinois insurance law are construed very strictly against the insurance company. An endorsement like this, on the other hand, is construed very broadly in favor of insurance, with the deck stacked in favor of the insured. So if the court in Illinois has given broad construction to the term an insured in the context of an exclusion, where it would normally be construed narrowly, that exact same verbiage in this context would then be construed even more broadly. And so it would make this an easier case for an expansive view than the prior Illinois cases where they've construed it very broadly in an exclusion.
Mr. Evelyn, the district court focused on the second sentence in that endorsement. In your opening brief, you offered an explanation that would give some meaning to that sentence, but that explanation pretty obviously confused liability and indemnification. In your reply brief, you came up with a new explanation for the meaning of that sentence involving potential mergers or acquisitions that, frankly, I found pretty confusing and unlikely. I want to give you an opportunity to elaborate on that, if you could.
I'll elaborate on that, and then I will also afterwards explain why that sentence really doesn't impact the decision in this case. If you had a transaction, and let's say it was either a stock sale or some portion of assets and liabilities were parsed out, you would have a situation where there is a new company that holds prior assets and or liabilities that is by definition not going to be an insured. Depending on the contract language in the transaction documents and the insurance policy itself, there would be a basis for the insurance company to contend that that new company is not an insured under the prior policy that the predecessor company was. In that sense, that it would meet the literal definition of when that termination of coverage would trigger. To the other point as
have,
to what...
Have, it's creative. Has that explanation been adopted? Anything to support that other than your argument?
We haven't seen a case where that occurred.
Drafting history, form history?
No, but if you look at the standard under Illinois law for reviewing the verbiage and figuring out whether there's a duty to defend, it's the mere possibility of coverage. And that leads into the other point of why this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because that particular provision, it doesn't relate to the scope of coverage. It doesn't relate to whether an exclusion applies. It relates to an issue that's not even pertinent here, is when will coverage terminate? This case doesn't.
It relates, the phrase is an insured.
Right.
And so what is it? It's in both sentences. They're adjacent. Why isn't it reasonable to attribute the same meaning to that word, that phrase, in both instances?
Well, it is. I think it is reasonable to attribute the same meaning to it.
So in other words, because there are many insureds, it's possible to adopt Addict's interpretation of the endorsement clause and your interpretation of the phrase an insured. And in other words, what I'm trying to say, I think, is that an insured could still mean any insured, but it could be referring to any of the many different named insureds under the policy, right?
That is correct. That would be an interpretation that might be reasonable, and if that interpretation is reasonable, then by definition under Illinois law, you've got an ambiguity, and the deck remains stacked in favor of coverage, particularly in a duty to defend case.
Not necessarily an ambiguity. It's both here.
If it is both, and you say additional insured, which is a defined term, you are being added as an insured, and you continue on to define the coverage and the exclusions around the term an insured, then our position is that that isn't an ambiguity because you're telling the additional insured you're being added as an insured. And you've just conferred coverage on the additional insured by stating as much.
I assume you guys have your own insurance coverage for these kinds of claims?
No, not for these kinds. This would be...
No CGL policy?
This would fall under a self-insured retention, just given the amount
the size
of
issue. Okay.
Correct.
So is it typical for a subsidiary company like Allied to carry insurance only through its parent company? In other words, Allied didn't have other insurance in addition to, you know, that insurance through Addict?
It's fairly common in the setting of a conglomerate corporation like that where the parent company is going to buy insurance globally for all of its subsidiaries, most likely because you're going to get a better negotiated rate for it. I think what is also important in this case is let's assume that this is a vicarious liability provision. Let's redraft that. If this court were to redraft this for Addict and substitute in an insured to be named insured, all that does in this case is gets to the body of Illinois law where each and every case has still found the possibility of coverage, hence a duty to defend. And that line of cases is the Northbrook case, the USFI case, and all of those cases construed a provision that was not as broad, even if you assume that named insured is the triggering point. Those provisions said that the exclusion for coverage had to arise out of the conduct of the named insured or the acts or omissions of the named insured. We don't have that reference to named insured here, but the Illinois appellate courts in all of those cases came to the conclusion that arising out of the acts of or the omissions of the named insured, when you've got a situation like this where it is the named insured's employee on site, you could have situations where you have comparative fault. You could have situations where there's findings of negligent training and supervision. And so given the broad deference towards coverage in a duty to defend case, all of those cases, even in the vicarious liability setting, still found coverage. Our position is we're not to that yet because we are by definition in this provision provided coverage. But even if you substitute those words into this provision, which the court doesn't need to do, there would still be a duty to defend. And the relevant language here is even broader. The language is for the conduct of an insured. And that is broader than any of the duty to defend cases where even with reference to the named insured, they found the obligation to provide a defense because the term the conduct is an extremely broad term. And, of course, what occurred in the underlying case involved the conduct of an insured, namely Mr. Morris, who is an employee performing under the contractual obligations on behalf of System Transport. So any way you evaluate this, even if we redraft the language, the conclusion and the outcome is the same. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Chemers?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Robert Chemers from Pretzel and Stauffer here in Chicago on behalf of the plaintiff, Appalee, American Trucking and Transportation Insurance Company. I was confused when I read the brief that Mr. Eblen filed. I was somewhat confused by his argument, but that might just be because I'm the 12th lawyer this court gets to hear, at least this morning session, before your afternoon session. And I'll be brief. Judge Hamilton, you mentioned creative possibilities. Under Illinois law, a creative possibility does not create an ambiguity in a policy. If policy language is susceptible to more than one reasonable interpretation, then a court may deem it ambiguous. However, the discussion between the court and Mr. Eblen were all in connection with reasonable interpretations of the policy language, except the one offered by Allied 2, which is unreasonable, because you can't be both a named insured and an additional insured.
So what does the phrase "an insured" mean in the two key sentences?
An insured refers to the named insureds, which are listed right above the language of the additional insured endorsement. And I'm looking at page 5 of my brief of appellee. Transsystem, System Transport, and the other trucking companies. I think what's important here.
Well, I mean, at the risk of asking the obvious, why not write it that way?
Well, it says an insured. It says additional insured. The additional insureds are also listed. Tyco International U.S. Incorporated and its subsidiary and affiliated companies. And there might be 100 of them.
Right.
And what I was going to say, Your Honor, is whenever a court construes a policy, it looks to what's the intent? You have to read the policy as a whole. You can't parse one word out of various sentences. And if you look at go back to the master contract between System Transport and Tyco International, paragraph 8, which is set forth on page 2 and 3 of the brief of appellee. There's a hold harmless agreement where, pursuant to which, System agreed to hold the Tyco's entities, here Allied, harmless for damages for injury caused by System. It didn't agree to hold Allied or any of the related entities harmless for their own conduct. That having been said, that was the nature of the agreement pursuant to which the policy was endorsed to have an additional insured endorsement here for Allied. You have to look to the type of insurance purchased. Here it's trucking insurance. You have to look to the risk insured. The risk insured is System Transport and liability it may impose on the person for whom it's shipping. That would be Allied. And the purpose of the contract? The purpose of the contract is to hold Allied harmless for System's conduct.
So why not draft the additional insured language to refer no longer liable or for the conduct of a named insured?
Well, it's conduct of an insured. An insured is defined as one of the named insureds. Now,
Wait a sec. An insured is about as broad as you can get, right?
Well, if you look at the Smiley or the Brill case that they cite from the Illinois Appellate Court, that language, an or the or any, referred to a discussion with respect to the exclusions.
Well, you want us, I think, to read this as if it read, for the conduct of a named insured or any of their agents or employees, right?
That's the way the district court read it, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and why not draft it that way?
Well, we believe it is drafted that way, especially when the second sentence is read in conjunction with the first, and the overall purpose of this endorsement is looked at in the light of the contractual agreement that System had with Allied. The argument that the second sentence, the additional insured status of the above-named additional insured ceases when the additional insured is no longer liable for the conduct of an insured. Well, the additional insured is always liable for its own conduct. That's what the district court concluded, and that is unmistakable. It is always liable for its own conduct. Yes, Your Honor.
Finish your thought. I'm so sorry. No. Why? Go ahead.
I was probably going to be cycling anyway, so I will address Your Honor's question.
Okay. So how do you distinguish those cases holding that, unlike a definite article, the phrase "an insured" actually means any insured?
Well, I think what you have to look at is the language of as insureds. And I think Your Honor, Judge Rovner, mentioned that there are many insureds under this policy. There are many system entities. They're listed as the named insureds, and there are many additional insureds, and altogether they are insured. But when it refers to an insured, it's referring to a named insured, and unfortunately, Judge Hamilton, it's written the way it is written. We deal with the language we have, and the language we have makes sense when it is construed reasonably. The additional insured is liable to others for the conduct of an insured under the applicable policy. It can't be liable to others for its own conduct. It's liable to others for the conduct of the named insured, which is what the contract said system was supposed to provide, and system provided this through its insurer, ADIC. And the second sentence shows the synthesis of this concept by saying that the additional insured status ends when the additional insured is no longer liable for the conduct of an insured. And that has two points in time. When it's no longer liable, or when the policy expires, whichever occurs first. When it's no longer liable, is the underlying contract between system and Tyco could end. Allied suggests, and we suggest it's incorrect, that the trigger point for the second sentence would be, for example, if Allied is covered by other insurance. Judge Hamilton, you asked about that. They said they're not. You asked about a CGL policy. Part of this policy includes comprehensive general liability coverage, but it excludes trucking accidents because trucking, they're not covered by a CGL policy, and Allied has agreed or conceded that there is no coverage under the liability portion.
But you'd agree there's coverage under the trucking.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
That's the only
does that
part
make
of the
policy. Does that make any difference here? I mean, I didn't understand that point at the end of your brief.
The policy is multi-part.
Trucking coverage as well.
There's trucking coverage, which is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. There's general liability coverage, which excludes trucking coverage, which they concede does not apply. They also concede any issue with respect to being an insured because a certificate of insurance says you are also does not apply. So we're focused solely on the endorsement and whether the endorsement extends coverage to an additional insured for its own negligence, and we submit it does not. Every Illinois case involving additional insureds, and we cited many of them, every one involved an additional insured that had coverage for vicarious liability for the conduct of the named insured. That's the essence of being an additional insured. That is the moral hazard of insurance that a panel of this court recently talked about in Scottsdale Indemnity Company versus Village of Crestwood. Your Honor, Judge Hamilton, I believe, was on that panel. And we had a number of questions with each other, you of me, during that
argument. Were you arguing that case, too?
Yes.
I'm sorry I didn't remember that.
I had the village.
I remember the case.
They came out on the short end of 31 underlying lawsuits. But be that as it may, every Illinois case involving additional insurance involves an additional insured that have potential coverage for exposure to damages, not because of its own conduct, but because of the conduct of the named insured. That's the essence of insurance. You don't increase the risk if you add somebody to your policy but don't insure their conduct. You only insure them for damages that befall them because of the named insured. That's the essence of insurance.
You make much of the fact in the brief that the certificate of insurance does not by itself convey rights.
Right.
Was Allied attempting to claim rights under the insurance certificate?
They did, but then they concede that point, and it's a non-issue. They concede that point. They also concede the point that our general liability coverage form does not provide coverage. We would suggest to this court that this endorsement means what it says as the district court interpreted it. That is, that it extends coverage to Allied for its exposure to damages because of the conduct of system transport. Since it was sued only for its own negligence, it does not provide it a duty to defend. We would ask the court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Unless
there are questions.
No. Oh, well. No.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Evelyn, how much time? I'll give him two more.
I can maybe finish in one, Your Honor. Give it a try. This endorsement is broader than any endorsement in all of the cited cases, including the Northbrook, Illinois M. Casco, USFI, and West Bend, all of which, if you redrafted the endorsement to read the way ADIC wants it to have the named insured be the triggering language still provided a duty to defend, even with tighter verbiage within that, more favorable verbiage to the carrier within that. The only context in which the duty to defend in this setting has been denied has been where it specifies that solely the negligence of the named insured, that's the precise verbiage where Illinois appellate courts have said, that means that if there is any sort of concurrent negligence and it's not only a suit for negligence against the named insured, an exception applies. And it's only been when the language is that tight where the duty to defend has been denied. And those are the cases that Attuck has cited in its brief where coverage has been denied as a matter of the duty to defend issue.
Does it make sense for us to construe the language of this endorsement together with the contract between Tyco and Tyco and Systems, pursuant to which the insurance was obtained?
I don't think it's necessary, just because on the face of the endorsement, the language is so clear when it's reconciled with Illinois law that the duty to defend is going to be there. I think that if you look at the risk allocation structure within that contract, it's very clear that the idea was for anything occurring in connection with this trucking activity that there would be coverage provided by Attuck in it. But I don't think that's part of the court's inquiry on this appeal.
So, thank you. Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement. Were you all here for the first case today?
I was
here. What should we do? Okay. This court is in recess until tomorrow morning. What? Oh, I was trying to forget. Until this afternoon when I have to come back. But they don't. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.